The Red Man's Rebuke by Chief Pokagon, narrated by Dr. John Lau, by the author. My object in publishing The Red Man's Rebuke on the bark of the white birch tree is out of loyalty to my own people and gratitude to the Great Spirit, who in his wisdom provided for our use for untold generations this most remarkable tree with manifold bark used by us instead of paper, being of greater value to us as it could not be injured by sun or water. Out of the bark of this wonderful tree were made hats, caps, and dishes for domestic use, while our maidens tied with it the knot that sealed their marriage vow. Wigwams were made of it, as well as large canoes that outrode the violent storms on lake and sea. It was also used for light and fuel at our war councils and spirit dances. Originally, the shores of our northern lakes and streams were fringed with it and evergreen, and the white, charmingly contrasted with the green mirrored from the water, was indeed beautiful. But like the red man, this tree is vanishing from our forests. Alas for us, our day is o'er. Our fire is out from shore to shore. No more for us the wild deer bounds. The plow is on our hunting grounds. The pale man's axe rings through our woods. The pale man's sail skims o'er floods. Our pleasant springs are dry. Our children look by power oppressed. Beyond the mountains of the west, our children go to die. To the memory of William Penn, Roger Williams, the late lamented Helen Hunt Jackson, and many others now in heaven, who conceived that noble spirit of justice which recognizes the brotherhood of the red man, and to all others now living, defenders of our race, I most gratefully dedicate this tribute of the forest, Chief Pokagon, by Simon Pokagon, Potawatomi Chief. Shall not one line lament our forest race, for you struck out from wild creation's face, freedom, that selfsame freedom you adore, bade us defend our violated shore. In behalf of my people, the American Indians, I hereby declare to you, the pale-faced race that has usurped our lands and homes, that we have no spirit to celebrate with you the great Columbian Fair, now being held in this Chicago city, the wonder of the world. No. Sooner would we hold high joy day over the graves of our departed fathers than to celebrate our own funeral, the discovery of America. And while you, who are strangers and who live here, bring the offerings of the handiwork of your own lands and your hearts in admiration, rejoice over the beauty and grandeur of this young republic, and you say, behold the wonders wrought by our children in this foreign land. Do not forget that this success has been at the sacrifice of our homes and a once happy race. Where these great Columbian show buildings stretched skyward, and where this queen city of the West once stood, the red man's wigwam, here met their old men, young men, and maidens. Here blazed their council fires. But now the eagle's eye can find no trace of them. Here was the center of their widespread hunting grounds, stretching far eastward, and to the Great Salt Gulf southward, and to the lofty Rocky Mountain chain westward, and all about and beyond the Great Lakes northward roamed vast herds of buffalo that no man could number, while moose, deer, and elk were found from ocean to ocean. Pigeons, ducks, and geese in near bowshot moved in great clouds through the air, while fish swarmed our streams, lakes, and seas close to shore. All were provided by the Great Spirit for our use. We destroyed none except for food and dress, had plenty, and were contented and happy. But alas, the pale faces came by chance to our shores, many times very needy and hungry. We nursed and fed them, fed the ravens that were soon to pluck out our eyes and the eyes of our children. For no sooner had the news reached the old world that a new continent had been found, peopled with another race of men, than, locust-like, they swarmed on our coasts, and like the carrion crows in spring, that in circles wheel and clamor long and loud, and will not cease until they find and feast upon the dead. So these strangers from the east, long circuits made, and turkey-like they gobbled in our ears. Give us gold. Give us gold. Where find you gold? Where find you gold? We gave for promises and gewgaws all the gold we had, and showed them where to dig for more. To repay us, they robbed our homes of fathers, mothers, sons, and daughters. Some were forced across the sea for slaves in Spain, while multitudes were dragged into the mines to dig for gold, and held in slavery there, until all who escaped not died under the lash of the cruel taskmaster. It finally passed into their history that the red man of the West, unlike the black man of the East, will die, for he'll be a slave. Our hearts were crushed by such base ingratitude. And as the United States has now decreed, no Chinaman shall land upon our shores. So we then felt that no such barbarians as they should land on ours. In those days that tried our fathers' souls, tradition says, a crippled gray-haired sire told his tribe that in the visions of the night he was lifted high above the earth and in great wonder beheld a vast spider web spread out over the land from the Atlantic Ocean toward the setting sun. Its network was made of rods of iron. Along its lines in all directions rushed monstrous spiders, greater in strength and larger far than any beast of earth, clad in brass and iron, dragging after them long rows of wigwams with families therein, outstripping in their course the flight of birds that fled before them. Hissing from their nostrils came forth fire and smoke, striking terror to both fowl and beast. The red man hid themselves in fear or fled away, while the white man trained these monsters for the war path as warriors for battle. The old man who saw the vision claimed that it meant that the Indian race would surely pass away before the pale-faced strangers. He died a martyr to his belief. Centuries have passed since that time, and we now behold in the vision, as in a mirror, the present network of railroads and the monstrous engines with their fire, smoke, and hissing steam, with cars attached as they go sweeping through the land. The cyclone of civilization rolled westward. The forests of untold centuries were swept away. Streams dried up. Lakes fell back from their ancient bounds. And all our fathers once loved to gaze upon was destroyed, defaced, or marred, except the sun, moon, and starry skies above, which the Great Spirit in his wisdom hung up beyond their reach. Still on the storm cloud rolled, while before its lightning and thunder, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the air withered like grass before the flame, were shot for love of power alone, and left a spoil upon the plains, their bleaching bones now scattered far and near, in shame declare the wanton cruelty of pale-faced men. The storm unsatisfied on land swept our lakes and streams, while before its clouds of hooks, nets, and glistening spears, the fish vanished from our waters, like the morning dew before the rising sun. Thus our inheritance was cut off, and we were driven and scattered as sheep before the wolves. Nor was this all. They brought among us fatal diseases our fathers knew not of. Our medicine men tried in vain to check the deadly plague, but they themselves died, and our people fell as fall the leaves before the autumn's blast. To be just, we must acknowledge there were some good men with these strangers who gave their lives for ours, and in great kindness taught us the revealed will of the Great Spirit through his Son Jesus, the mediator between God and man. But while we were being taught to love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, and strength, and our neighbors as ourselves, our children were taught to lisp, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." Bad men of the same race, whom we thought of the same belief, shocked our faith in the revealed will of the Father as they came among us with bitter oaths upon their lips, something we had never heard before, and cups of fire water in their hands, something we had never seen before. They pressed the sparkling glasses to our lips and said, "Drink, and you will be happy." We drank thereof, we and our children, but alas, like the serpent that charms to kill, the drink habit coiled about the heartstrings of its victims, shocking unto death friendship, love, honor, manhood, all that makes men good and noble, crushing out all ambition, and leaving naught but a culprit vagabond in the place of a man. Now, as we have been taught to believe that our first parents ate of the forbidden fruit and fell, so we as fully believe that this fire water is the hard cider of the white man's devil, made from the fruit of that tree that brought death into the world and all our woes. The arrow, the scalping knife, and the tomahawk used on the warpath were merciful compared with it. They were used in our defense. But the accursed drink came like a serpent in the form of a dove. Many of our people partook of it without mistrust, as children pluck the flowers and clutch a scorpion in their grasp. Only when they feel the sting, they let the flowers fall. But nature's children had no such power, for when the viper's fangs they felt, they only hugged the reptile the more closely to their breasts, while friends before them stood pleading with prayers and tears that they would let the deadly serpent drop, but all in vain. Although they promised so to do, yet with laughing grin, in steps uncertain like the fool, they still more frequently guzzled down the hellish drug. Finally, conscience ceased to give alarm, and led by deep despair to life's last brink, and goaded by demons on every side, they cursed themselves, they cursed their friends, they cursed their beggar babes and wives, they cursed their God and died. You say of us that we are treacherous, vindictive, and cruel. In answer to the charge, we declare to all the world, with our hands uplifted before high heaven, that before the white man came among us, we were kind, outspoken, and forgiving. Our real character has been misunderstood because we have resented the breaking of treaties made with the United States as we honestly understood them. The few of our children who are permitted to attend your schools in great pride tell us that they read in your histories how William Penn, a Quaker and a good man, made treaties with 19 tribes of Indians, and that neither he nor they ever broke them. And further, that during 70 years, while Pennsylvania was controlled by the Quakers, not a drop of blood was shed, nor a war whoop sounded by our people. Your own historians and our traditions show that for nearly 200 years, different Eastern powers were striving for the mastery of the New World, and that our people were persuaded by the different factions to take the war path, being generally led by white men who had been discharged from prisons for crimes committed in the Old World. Read the following, left on record by Peter Martyr, who visited our forefathers in the day of Columbus. It is certain that the land among these people is as common as the sun and water, and that mine and thine, the seed of all misery, have no place with them. They are content with so little, that in so large a country they have rather a superfluity than a scarceness, so that they seem to live in the golden world without toil, living in open gardens, not entrenched with dikes, divided with hedges, or defended with walls. They deal truly with one another, without laws, without books, without judges. They take him for an evil and mischievous man, who taketh pleasure in doing hurt to another. And albeit they delight not in superfluities, yet they make provision for the increase of such roots whereof they make bread, content with such simple diet whereof health is preserved and disease avoided. Your own history show that Columbus, on his first visit to our shores, in a message to the King and Queen of Spain, paid our forefathers this beautiful tribute. They are loving, uncovetous people, so docile in all things, that I swear, your majesties, there is not in the world a better race or a more delightful country. They love their neighbors as themselves, and their talk is ever sweet and gentle, accompanied with smiles. And though they be naked, yet their manners are decorous and praiseworthy. But a few years passed away, and your historians left to be perused with shame the following fact. On the islands of the Atlantic Ocean, and in the populous empires of Mexico and Peru, the Spaniards, through pretense of friendship and religion, gained audience with chiefs and kings, their families and attendants. They were received with great kindness and courtesy, but in return they most treacherously seized and bound in chains the unsuspecting natives, and as a ransom for their release, demanded large sums of gold, which were soon given by their subjects. But instead of granting them freedom as promised, they were put to death in a most shocking manner. Their subjects were then hunted down like wild beasts, with bloodhounds, robbed and enslaved, while under pretext to convert them to Christianity. The rack, the scourge, and the faggot were used. Some were burned alive in their thickets and fastnesses for refusing to work the mines as slaves. Tradition says these acts of base ingratitude were communicated from tribe to tribe throughout the continent, and that a universal wail as one voice went up from all of the tribes of the unbroken wilderness. We must beat back these strangers from our shores, before they seize our lands and homes, or slavery and death are ours. Reader, pause here. Close your eyes. Shut out from your heart all prejudice against our race, and honestly consider the above records penned by the pale-faced historians centuries ago, and tell us in the name of eternal truth, and by all that is sacred and dear to mankind, was there ever a people, without the slightest reason of offense, more treacherously imprisoned and scourged than we have been? And tell us, have crimes, despotism, violence, and slavery ever been dealt out in a more wicked manner to crush out life and liberty? Or was ever a people more mortally offended than our forefathers were? Almighty Spirit of humanity, let the arms of compassion embrace and shield us from the charge of treachery, vindictiveness, and cruelty, and save us from further oppression. And may the greatest chief of the United States appoint no more broken down or disappointed politicians as agents to deal with us, but may he select good men that are tried and true, men who fear not to do the right. This is our prayer. What would remain for us if we were not allowed to pray? All else we acknowledge to be in the hands of this great republic. It is clear that for years after the discovery of this country, we stood before the coming strangers as a block of marble before the sculptor, ready to be shaped into a statue of grace and beauty. But in their greed for gold, the block was hacked to pieces and destroyed. Childlike, we trusted in them with all our hearts, and as the young nestling while yet blind, swallows each morsel given by the parent bird. So we drank in all they said. They showed us the compass that guided them across the trackless deep. And as its needle swung to and fro, only resting to the north, we looked upon it as a thing of life from the eternal world. We could not understand the lightning and thunder of their guns, believing they were weapons of the gods, nor could we fathom their wisdom in knowing and telling us the exact time in which the sun or moon should be darkened. Hence we looked upon them as divine. We revered them. Yes, we trusted them, as infants trust in the arms of their mothers. But again and again was our confidence betrayed, until we were compelled to know that greed for gold was all the balance wheel they had. The remnant of the beasts are now wild and keep beyond the arrow's reach. The fowls fly high in the air. The fish hide themselves in deep waters. We have been driven from the homes of our childhood and from the burial places of our kindred and friends, and scattered far westward into desert places where multitudes have died from homesickness, cold, and hunger, and are suffering and dying still for want of food and blankets. As the hunted deer close chased all day long, when night comes on, weary and tired, lies down to rest, mourning for companions and the morning herd, all scattered, dead and gone, so we, through weary years, have tried to find some place to safely rest. But all in vain. Our throbbing hearts unceasing say, the hounds are howling on our tracks. Our say, history has been told by weeping parents to their children from generation to generation. And as the fear of the fox and the duckling is hatched, so the wrongs we have suffered are transmitted to our children, and they look upon the white man with distrust as soon as they are born. Hence our worst acts of cruelty should be viewed by all the world with Christian charity as being but the echo of bad treatment dealt out to us. Therefore we pray our critics elsewhere to be not like the thoughtless boy who contemns the toiling bees wherever found as vindictive and cruel, because in robbing their homes, he once received the poison darts that nature gave for their defense. Our strongest defense against the onward marching hordes, we fully realize, is as useless as the struggles of a lamb born high in air, pierced to its heart in the talons of an eagle. We never shall be happy here anymore. We gaze into the faces of our little ones for smiles of infancy to please, and into the faces of our young men and maidens for joys of youth to cheer advancing age. But alas, instead of smiles of joy, we find but looks of sadness there. Then we fully realize in the anguish of our souls that their young and tender hearts, in keenest sympathy with ours, have drank in the sorrows we have felt, and their sad faces reflect it back to us again. No rainbow of promise spans the dark cloud of our afflictions. No cheering hopes are painted on our midnight sky. We only stand with folded arms and watch and wait to see the future deal with us no better than the past. No cheer of sympathy is given us, but in answer to our complaints, we are told the triumphal march of the eastern race westward is by the unalterable decree of nature termed by them the survival of the fittest. And so we stand, as upon the seashore, chained hand and foot, while the incoming tide of the great ocean of civilization rises slowly but surely to overwhelm us. But a few more generations, and the last child of the forest will have passed into the world beyond, into that kingdom where Keshemnado, the Great Spirit, dwelleth, who loveth justice and mercy, and hateth evil, who has declared the fittest in his kingdom shall be those alone that hear and aid his children when they cry, and that love him and keep his commandments. In that kingdom, many of our people in faith believe he will summon the pale-faced spirits to take position on his left and the red spirits upon his right, and that he will say, "Sons and daughters of the forest, your prayers for deliverance from the iron heel of oppression through centuries past are recorded in this book now open before me, made from the bark of the white birch, a tree under which for generations past you have mourned and wept. On its pages silently has been recorded your sad history. It has touched my heart with pity, and I will have compassion." Then, turning to his left, he will say, "Sons and daughters of the East, all hear and give heed unto my words. While on earth I did great and marvelous things for you. I gave my only Son, who declared unto you my will, and as you had freely received, to so freely give and declare the gospel unto all people. A few of you have kept the faith, and through opposition and great tribulation have labored hard and honestly for the redemption of mankind, regardless of race or color. To all such I now give divine power to fly on lightning wings throughout my universe. Now, therefore, listen. And when the great drum beats, let all try their powers to fly. Only those can rise who acted well their part on earth to redeem and save the fallen." The drum will be sounded, and that innumerable multitude will appear like some vast sea of wounded birds struggling to rise. We shall behold it, and shall hear their fluttering as the rumbling of an earthquake, and to our surprise shall see but a scattering few in triumph rise, and hear their songs re-echo through the vault of heaven as they sing, "Glory to the highest, who hath redeemed and saved us." Then the Great Spirit will speak with a voice of thunder to the remaining shame-faced multitude. "Hear ye, it is through great mercy that you have been permitted to enter these happy hunting grounds. Therefore I charge you in presence of these red men that you are guilty of having tyrannized over them in many and strange ways. I find you guilty of having made wanton wholesale butchery of their game and fish. I find you guilty of using tobacco, a poisonous weed made only to kill parasites on plants and lice on man and beast. You found it with the red man, who used it only in smoking the pipe of peace to confirm their contracts in place of a seal. But you multiplied its use, not only in smoking, but in chewing, snuffing, thus forming unhealthy, filthy habits, and by cigarettes, the abomination of abominations, learned little children to hunger and thirst after the father and mother of palsy and cancers. I find you guilty of tagging after the pay agents sent out by the great chief of the United States among the Indians to pay off their birthright claims to home and liberty and native lands, and then sneaking about their agencies by deceit and trickery, cheating and robbing them of their money and goods, thus leaving them poor and naked. I also find you guilty of following the trail of Christian missionaries into the wilderness among the natives, and when they had set up my altars, and the great work of redemption had just begun, and some in faith believed, you then and there most wickedly set up the idol of Majemnado, the devil, and there stuck out your sign, sample rooms. You then dealt out to the sons of the forest a most damnable drug, fitly termed on earth by Christian women a beverage of hell, which destroyed both body and soul, taking therefore all their money in blankets, and scrupling not to take in pawn the Bibles given them by the servants. Therefore know ye, this much abused race shall enjoy the liberties of these happy hunting grounds, while I teach them my will, which you were in duty bound to do while on earth. but instead you blocked up the highway that led to heaven, that the car of salvation might not pass over. Had you done your duty, they as well as you would now be rejoicing in glory with my saints, with whom you fluttering tried this day in vain to rise. But now I say unto you, stand back. You shall not tread upon the heels of my people, nor tyrannize over them any more. Neither shall you with Gatling gun or otherwise disturb or break up their prayer meetings in camp any more. Neither shall you practice with weapons of lightning and thunder any more. Neither shall you use tobacco in any shape, way, or manner. Neither shall you touch, taste, handle, make, buy, or sell anything that can intoxicate any more. And know ye, ye cannot buy out the law or skulk by justice here. If any attempt is made on your part to break these commandments, I shall forthwith grant these red men of America great power and delegate them to cast you out of paradise and hurl you headlong through its outer gates into the endless abyss beneath, far beyond where darkness meets with light, there to dwell, and thus shut you out from my presence and the presence of angels and the light of heaven forever and ever.